I know each person will say their attachment style is the hardest one to deal with, but I swear I feel like being DA with like FA following close behind has been like super challenging. But the bigger the things you overcome, the bigger the sort of rewards and the bigger the gratefulness you have.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I am so excited you're here. I am your co-host, Thais Gibson, along with our new special host, Mike DiZio. This is a podcast that discusses everything related to integrated attachment theory, the new attachment theory, along with the subconscious mind, relationships, communication, needs, boundaries, and so much more. Throughout this podcast, you'll see a series of episodes I upload with new information, educational tips all about how to thrive in relationships and really master your emotional state in your life, along with special guests hosted by Mike DiZio to discuss all of these amazing topics in some longer form content. Thank you so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
My guest today focuses on helping people change their limiting beliefs about themselves so they can attain true satisfaction in their lives. His own learning and experience has shown him that when we remove the constant worry and self-doubt, we can access parts of our brain that open us up to love and creation instead of fear. He currently works for the Personal Development School, where he hosts weekly Zoom meetups with the students so they can connect, get support, and heal together in a safe and accepting environment. His strengths lie in making people feel important and allowing them to be seen and heard. Personal Development School viewers and listeners, let's welcome today's guest, me, Mike DiZio. So today's going to be a little different. I just wanted to give you a little snapshot of myself, my journey, what I've been through. I have quite a story, and I think it would be pretty interesting to viewers, and hopefully some will find it inspiring. I just want to give you a better idea of what I've been through. And, you know, if one person's listening and can take inspiration and feel better about themselves or maybe what's possible, that's really the goal here. But also just, you know, for you guys to get to know me better. I took a lot of notes here as I was writing this, so I'll try to speak from the heart as much as I can, but I'm excited, a little nervous, but I want people to, again, know about me, my story, and what brought me to where I am today. So I'm going to ask some of the normal questions I ask my guests. I'll focus more on my backstory and the things that I've struggled with, and yeah, we'll go from there. We'll see how it goes. Okay, so starting off, you know, question you should ask, can you tell us a little bit about your background or your backstory? So I was a very sensitive kid, extremely sensitive, extremely shy, nervous all the time. I was basically scared of my own shadow. I cried for the first day of kindergarten. I cried first day of grade one. During sports teams, the first day I cried. Cub Scouts, if anybody knows what that is. I cried during that. I was just really scared, nervous kid. And one thing, my dad's awesome. He didn't like to see me struggle. If he saw me crying or saw me upset or uncomfortable, he would swoop right in and rescue me. So on one hand, that's like, wow, what a good dad. And I felt protected and safe with him. But I didn't get to develop that sort of sit in the fire kind of resilience where, you know, just because something's uncomfortable, sometimes you just have to sort of wait a bit, then it becomes comfortable, and then you can do it. And because that happened so many times, my dad rescued me so many times. I don't think I completed one sleepover. My dad would always pick me up in the middle of the night because I felt scared there was a monster or someone going to break in the house. So like I said, I never really stayed in the fire and I never developed this ability to see things through. As soon as it was uncomfortable, I was out. So then after that, high school was fun, but it was a big struggle. And I'm going to touch on that in the next question. For university and college, I had such a fear of public speaking that I chose all of my courses and my degree based on courses that had little to no public speaking in them. If it did have public speaking in it, and I saw there was a low percentage for the mark, I would take the course and I would ask the teacher, hey, do you think I could write a makeup exam or write an essay? I have an anxiety and I can't do presentations. Some would say, yeah, sure, no problem. Others would say, no, you have to do it. And I would just take the zero. I would take the fail in the public speaking mark. Basically, I graduated college and university with a general studies degree. I bet you didn't even know they had that, but I took all the courses, not based on what I wanted to do, what I thought, oh, this would be great for a career or something that called to me. It was strictly choosing them out of fear and out of not having to do public speaking. And I'll touch on that a little bit later. After I graduated, I jumped around to so many different jobs in so many different industries. Again, a lot of that being led by fear and uncertainty. Then I had the rock bottom moment, which I'll mention that a bit later, but it led me to coaching and then working for the personal development school. So that's kind of where I'm at as far as, you know, a brief little life synopsis up till now. So then my next question is, in your life, was there a catalyst, big realization, a rock bottom moment that really pushed you to dive into your own healing and healing of your own attachment style? But before I knew about attachment styles, I'll just sort of let you know some of the things that made me really be like, I need to change. This is way too tough. So high school first. High school was very, very challenging in the sense that in elementary school, I was pretty popular and well-liked. I didn't really have to try much to win people over. I think people just liked me, my nature. I was tall, liked sports. I just really didn't really have to do much to be popular. Then I got to high school and, you know, I was the small fish in the big pond and nobody knew me. So nobody had to like me. Nobody had to try to be my friend or win me over. So that was really distressing to me because I was like, oh, well, I was popular in elementary. I should be in high school. So I noticed the popular kids, they were loud, they were outgoing, they were funny. So I just thought, okay, that's all I got to do to be a popular kid. I just got to be super outgoing. The problem is I was an introvert by nature. I am an introvert by nature. So I was doing everything I could to try to be an extrovert. And it was really a lot of things that I wasn't naturally comfortable with, you know, trying to tell a story in front of a big crowd of people or telling a joke. And I was so nervous and worried about impressing these people that I wasn't myself. I wasn't even that funny. I was, again, more worried about messing up and trying to look cool than, you know, being myself. So I started to hate myself. I started to hate my introverted nature. And I just was very self-defeating and a lot of negative self-talk. And I was just so mad that I wasn't born extroverted and more, you know, naturally loud and outgoing. So you can imagine you're trying to make everybody like you, but deep down inside, you really don't like yourself. That was a huge struggle that I had. And eventually towards the later grades, it just got too much and I was too anxious and worried all the time. So I ended up taking medication. I went on an anti-anxiety type pill. And it kind of worked to an extent. It sort of made me extroverted. And I, you know, got to do a lot of things for the first time because, you know, I wasn't so busy beating myself up. So I had a girlfriend for the first time. There was a few other things, but I was just more comfortable. I was feeling more comfortable with what I was doing. The problem is I was like, I don't want to take pills for my whole life. Like if I stop these pills, am I going to go back to the way that I was? So that was one sort of area. And when I discovered even what introversion was, I didn't know at the time what an introvert was. I just hated how I was not comfortable in big groups. And I was more introspective and more, you know, needed recharge time. I would get tired before the rest of the group. Once I really understood about introversion and the traits and whatnot, it was a little easier to swallow. I didn't think I was so broken or had, you know, these big problems that you needed solving. So that was that area. Oh, and then there was public speaking. So I mentioned before my public speaking fear. This started in grade 10. There was a class where it was a French class. We had to write a storybook, a kid's storybook with illustrations. So it was due to be handed in on a certain day, came in, handed it in. And then the teacher said, okay, now we're going to present our books to the class. Well, I wasn't ready for that at all. And I was usually nervous doing speeches and presentations in elementary school and everything. But if I practiced and I knew it was happening, I could get through it. But because this was just thrown on me, I got up there and I started to just crash and burn. My voice started shaking. My heart was beating out of its chest. I thought I was going to fall off the chair. I think I was sitting on a chair at the front of the class, and I was just spiraling. And I still remember this day. I remember hearing, I think it was a female voice saying, "Oh," it was hard to watch. And I know it's that feeling of when you see a comedian, an amateur comedian doing their set for the first time, and they're just crashing and burning. And it's like, you get that secondhand embarrassment. So I know everybody was looking at me. They couldn't look me in the eyes. I was so embarrassed. I was so ashamed. I got through to the end of it. But since that day, it changed me. I had a hard time doing anything that remotely resembled public speaking, reading a few passages from a book in front of a group, orientations where you had to go around the room and introduce yourself. I would start almost getting a panic attack before it came my turn. And a lot of times I would just leave the room and hide out for like an hour and come back. And, you know, I would miss the whole exercise. And someone might be like, "Oh, like what happened? Where'd you go?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm feeling a little sick. I was in the bathroom. I had to go take care of my sickness." And they're like, "Oh, okay." So nobody knew, but I was constantly ducking and dodging and getting out of any situation where I was the focus of people's attention. So that was really tough. But how that resolved was pretty amazing. So I had that for almost 10 years and it was really running my life. And I met a girl, and as I mentioned with university, it was affecting choices of everything, career, jobs, social outings. It was brutal. It wasn't fun at all. So I met a girl and she cared about me. So she actually bought me public speaking lessons. And I went to this sort of weekly course, and this awesome Australian woman, she led us through this workshop. And I don't know, it was like a 6-week workshop, but I had to give a presentation at the end of it. And, you know, I it was nerve wracking, but I did it and I was happy I did. But the real test was, I had a friend who asked me to be best man at his wedding. And I didn't want to be asked. And I was like, really hoping that he wouldn't ask me. And then he did. And I was like, "Oh my gosh," I was so nervous. I was like, "Oh my God," because it's going to be in front of 300 people, right? Me giving a speech. Generally, the best man gives a speech at the wedding. So I just said, "You know what? Screw this. This is like, yeah, I did the workshop, but still, this is a huge comfort zone stretch. But I'm like, screw it. If I don't tackle this, or if I don't, nip this in the bud, I'm going to be running from this kind of stuff my whole life. And it's going to affect things that I want to do." So anyway, I wrote a speech. I practiced it many times. I think I even practiced it in the venue. For those who do public speaking, I learned that if you actually practice it, first of all, if you practice it at home in the mirror, that's helpful. But if you could actually practice it in the venue, your subconscious mind, once it goes to do it, it's like, we've been here before. We've done this. This is not brand new, first time, totally scary, adrenaline spike. So anyway, I did it. It went amazing. It went absolutely amazing. So that gave me so much confidence and really healed a lot of my worry about, you know, speaking in front of other people. What was cool about that is then I started seeking out public speaking engagements. I started looking for things where I could present Toastmasters. I delivered some workshops. I was just so happy. I felt like I'd conquered Mount Everest. It was such a 10-year long, really, really tough thing to struggle with. I don't know if anybody out there can relate. Would love to hear if they do, but this was my reality for a long time. And it was a hard thing that I had to constantly hide. So that was amazing. The other sort of the next rock bottom was, you know, I still had my core wounds of not loving myself. Anyway, the second rock bottom was I've been going to all these different careers, mainly for A, I was trying to chase money. And then B, I wanted to chase status. I wanted to be like, I wanted my friends to look at me and be like, "Wow," or my family. I wanted people to look at me and be like, "Wow, he's working for this company. That's amazing." So I got a job actually at a very respectable children's hospital. It's actually one of the best in the world in the HR department. And it was so out of my element. Basically, I had to be in a cubicle and on the computer all day. And you have to be super organized for this position. And I'm not really an organized person. And it was killing me, this job. I was in the cubicle for 12 hours. And I remember I'd wake up in the middle of the night thinking about it. I'd wake up before the alarm clock few hours before it, just starting to worry about the day. It was slowly making me a really anxious, nervous wreck. And again, it's because I was chasing things that weren't authentic to me. I wasn't really knowing what I loved, what I liked, what drove me. I was chasing things for the wrong reasons. So anyway, it got so bad that I just had enough. It was a rock bottom. I was like, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of going job to job and not finding what I like. I'm tired of struggling. It was just, I'd had enough. So I looked at my finances and I had enough money to not work for a little while. I'd saved up a good amount of money. So I said, screw this. I'm going all in on my healing. So I quit this job and I spent the next 6 months eating, sleeping, drinking, showering in personal development, personal growth, healing, anybody, all the books, you name it. I was reading every day. I was watching YouTube videos. I was journaling. I was meditating every single day like clockwork. My 9-to-5 job was just doing personal development work on myself. And for me, that was unbelievable, the shift, because I took the time to do the subconscious reprogramming that was required. To say my life changed, the way that I acted, my self-esteem, so many things just got so much better. And I was comfortable. I could say for the first time I was comfortable, because I'd spent pretty much all my life feeling uncomfortable all the time. So this 6 months was such a beautiful thing for me. It was, like I said, it was life-changing. And I'm not saying everybody, you need to stop what you're doing and do what I did. But, you know, for my journey, that was exactly, I guess, what I needed. And I'm just blessed and grateful that I got to do that, because then, again, I started making choices out of love instead of out of fear. And it's such a game changer. It's such a different way to live life when you're choosing to go towards things that actually you want to go towards. I was sort of always taught, oh, there's one thing out there for you that you're good at, and you just got to find this one thing, and then you'll be happy. And I always thought, well, I don't know what that is. It seemed like a needle in a haystack. And what I didn't know, or, you know, what kind of wasn't messaged to me, is that you can do anything. Yeah, there's going to be fears. But if you want something really bad and you want to go towards something that really calls to you or resonates with you or makes you think, man, that would be so fulfilling and satisfying, you have to go towards that. And the people that are in those positions, I used to think they were gifted and, you know, born that way. But a lot of these people, they put in the work, they put in the hours, they put in the sleepless nights and the school and everything to get where they wanted to get. I've known people who I thought when I was younger, oh, they're not smart, they wouldn't be able to do that. Now they're lawyers or high profile positions. And it just goes to show, if you sort of limit yourself and think, oh, I'm only good enough to be this, I'm only good enough to be that, then that seals your fate 100%. But if you're willing to put in the time and the effort, you can do pretty much whatever you want to do. And I really do believe that. But if we're spinning our wheels and wasting our time going towards things for other people, for, you know, just for money, just for, you know, any other reason other than for you and what would make you feel on purpose and filled, then you're going to be taking yourself in the wrong direction and away from your happiness. So yeah, those were the two sort of the rock bottom moments that changed me fundamentally. Okay, so I'll go back to a few more questions here. I've done a lot of work to become secure. Yes, what was my attachment style before? So my highest percentage when I've done the test a few years ago was DA for sure, but followed not too shortly after is FA. So I'm not like pure DA. I'm more like a DA-FA. I know each person will say their attachment style is the hardest one to deal with, but I swear I feel like being DA with FA following close behind has been super challenging. But again, the bigger the things you overcome, the bigger the sort of rewards and the bigger the gratefulness you have. So even though I went through a ton of struggles, and as I was kind of writing out some things for this podcast, I was thinking, holy crap. Yeah, you overcame kind of a lot of challenging stuff. I needed to be reminded of, yeah, you did go through some challenges and you did overcome a lot of them. Of course, there's always still going to be things that to work on, but some of the things that literally had me every day feeling uncomfortable, you know, in fight or flight constantly, to not have that is amazing, obviously. So what were some of the hardest or most challenging things about your attachment style? I feel like I can go on for days about my the challenges that I've had in the past. I'll go over some here. People pleasing. I used to have a million friends, but a lot of them are kind of surface level friendships. I molded myself to make everyone like me. So I had a lot of friends in the past. A lot of people would say really good things about me, mainly like, oh, Mike's, he's so nice. He's such a nice guy. If every single person is saying you're nice, or that every single person likes you, it's probably a clue that you might be suppressing your own feelings and not, you know, letting out your true self, because not everyone's nice 24/7, 365. You're going to have moments where you're angry and frustrated with people, and, you know, somebody does something you don't like. But if you think you have to be nice all the time for, you know, people to like you and not leave you, it's just not true. So people pleasing was a big thing. Nice to be liked by all, but then when somebody doesn't like you, it's super stressful. And I used to be like, I'm going to get this person to like me. I know it. And a lot of times I would, and I'd kind of be proud of the fact that I could win most people over, but it came at a cost. I was drained all the time. And yeah, again, you're just taking your authentic self and just shoving it down. What else? I always thought I was unimportant. My parents never said that, but I just felt like the vibe that I was unimportant to others, that I didn't have anything really special about me. Our teachers never really pointed out anything special about me. I felt like there was nothing really, you know, that I should be proud of or work towards. I didn't get encouraged into this area or that area. I feel like I had to sort of navigate that all myself. What else? I never trusted myself and what I wanted. So choosing jobs. I saw this meme today on Facebook where in one box, the person says, I love routine. The next box says, until I'm bored, then I love excitement. Then the next box says, until I'm overwhelmed, then I love routine. That's me in a nutshell. Routine is good and it makes me feel comfortable and safe. But then I get bored and then I want something more exciting. And then I'll go towards that. And then that'll get too overwhelming or too stressful. And then I want to go back to the routine. And then the cycle goes on and on. For my career life, for 15 years, that was sort of the cycle. I would choose a job that's safe, really safe and, you know, mundane and predictable and doing the same task over and over and over. But then after a while, it felt like soul sucking. I felt like my brain is going to pickle and this is just, I need something more stimulating. So then I would go on the opposite end and get a sales job, and it was really dynamic and really fast paced. And that would be fun for a while until it got really overwhelming. And then I just had this strong need to run. The flight response for sure was my dominant response for, you know, fight, flight, fawn, or freeze. Flight was definitely the most kind of strong one. So yeah, this cycle happened over and over and over, just wanting something safe, not scary, predictable, comfortable, then switching to something exciting, but unpredictable. So I had to go back and forth for like 15 years to figure out what I really liked. My relationship to money, because of my attachment style, DAs are a little more, you know, resource conscious. So I was pretty stingy with money. I wasn't generous. I didn't treat people a lot, even though people would treat me and I would love it. I didn't always return the favor. And I was more really concerned about money and spending and counting pennies and all that. So I would observe all these people being so generous and so gifting people, paying for stuff, just being very open with their money. And then I noticed over time, I'm like, those are the people that are the most successful and have the most money, because they don't have this lack mentality, and they're not kind of like trying to hoard where there's no sort of flow in and out of money. So in changing a lot of my attachment wounds, especially the DA ones, now I'm a lot more generous and giving. And I'm telling you right now, I'm the most abundant that I've been my whole life. I have everything I need. I feel like I'm not lacking anything. If I want things, I can get them. Yeah, I'm not like rich by any means, but it's just a mentality now where giving, and I know that I'm always taken care of. And it's interesting, the relationship to money changes, you know, when you heal DA wounds and realize that we're here to thrive, not just to be these survival beings. And I really think when we're not so worried about our survival, we can definitely concentrate more on thriving and even just noticing how much we have, how much abundance is usually available. It's just, we can be kind of narrow focused sometimes. Anyway, that's my sort of thing that changed. I thought that was pretty neat. Taking risks too. You said never take risks. Not saying you should go out there and be super risky, but if you never take any risks, no reward, it's sort of true. Sometimes you have to take a calculated risk, and the people who sort of do that can come by some pretty amazing things. And I got to do that. I bought a property a couple of years ago. My parents, my dad specifically, he's very security minded, and that's fine. He would always say like, oh, you know, real estate's not the be all end all. There's better investments out there. But part of me was like, no, I know I should get a property. And an opportunity came up, and I think, you know, my dad again was trying to talk me all the reasons of why maybe it's not a great idea. But I was like, screw this. I'm bypassing my conditioning and, you know, my fears here. I'm like, I'm going for it. I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good neighborhood. I think this should turn out good. And it turned out really good, and I'm happy I did it. And yeah, so my risk tolerance has gone up since I've healed some attachment wounds, but not in a bad way. I'm not engaging in risky behaviors and stuff. What else? Oh, when I was unhealed, like friendships, I would cut people out of my life with no explanation. Just, I felt we weren't in an alignment. And then I would just be like, I'm out, and just stop talking to them, which is very, very hurtful to people. It's because at the time I didn't know, sort of, I thought if I spoke up for my needs or spoke up for something that I didn't like, or they did something that rubbed me the wrong way, that if I confronted them with it, they would get angry and leave anyway. I thought I had no sort of say in the relationship. And I also, because I judged myself so much, I judged others equally as harshly. So almost thinking, this person's never going to change. I'm not even going to bother. So this is how they are. This is how they act. I don't want to be around someone like that. So that was something when I was really unhealed that I did, that I'm not super proud of. And, you know, I wouldn't want someone just to cut me out if I did something that I wasn't even sure that I did. You know, maybe I was, you know, it could be anything, but if you're not aware of it, you don't get the chance to change the behavior. And, you know, if I care about someone and they point out something that I did or am doing that hurt them or caused them pain, I would want to address it and, you know, take accountability and change what I can change to save the relationship. So I think they should be given that chance as well. The emotional area when I was unhealed, had no feeling awareness. I knew two feelings, happy or sad, or good or bad. I don't know if you've ever seen those feelings wheels where they have 60 different shades of feelings you can have. And I remember seeing that. I'm like, are you kidding me? How is that possible to feel into all these different nuanced feelings and emotions? But I was so disconnected from my body that I tried to think my way through everything. And overthinking, you know, causes anxiety. And you're trying to, I had Dr. Russell, the anxiety doctor, on my podcast here a few weeks back. And he said, you can't think your way out of a problem that you started with thinking. So think, you can't just keep thinking, like it almost becomes an addiction. And then you think, okay, I'm going to figure this out, this solution. Eventually I'm going to come up with the right way to figure it out. But a lot of times we're just cutting off our body, we're cutting off our heart, we're cutting off a lot of valuable information that's coming through to us via our feelings and emotions. But for me, it's more of an avoidant. I was like, just would see emotions and feelings as annoying and frustrating and just would try to stuff them. But again, you're missing out on so much helpful information with your emotions and feelings. So I had to sort of start to get more in touch with my body. Meditation's good for that. Yoga's good for that. Just start, you know, paying attention to what's going on inside. Notice these little shifts. Notice where things feel tight. You don't have to start huge. It's just literally like a person who's, imagine you're a person with a clipboard and you're just going into your body and just start noticing what's going on there. Oh, I'm feeling a little bit of tension around my chest area. Okay. Note it. My stomach feels a little bit bloated right now. Okay. Just start to go inwards and just start to become familiar with your body, almost like you're starting a relationship with it. So if you're not used to that, just spend some time each day paying attention to body sensations. So that was one of the things when I was really unhealed. I always felt trapped. I would avoid situations, relationships, opportunities that came up for, you know, trips or whatever. I was always feared of being trapped, but, you know, spoiler alert, you're never trapped. You always have a choice. You have a voice. You feel trapped when you feel disempowered, that you won't be able to speak up, that you won't be able to leave because you're worried about being judged. You know, unless somebody has a key, puts you in a cage and takes away the key, then you're trapped. But these trapped wounds are generally, you know, we sort of trap ourselves and feel that we have no options, but there's always options. So communicating how I felt or why I felt a certain way, people, parents, whoever, loved ones would ask what's wrong if I seem frustrated. And it almost felt like I didn't have a language to explain to them. I was always like, I don't know. I just know I'm really frustrated right now, or I'm really nervous, or I'm really anxious. But I didn't know why, and I never knew why. And when I tried to explain it, I would get frustrated, and I just never had the language to say what was going on, because I didn't. I just knew I felt like my body was feeling uncomfortable and my mind was racing, and, you know, it was hard for me to sort of put words to what I was going through when I was definitely my most unhealed. Relationship-wise, the relationships I've had usually ended around the two-year mark, like clockwork. When things got serious or there was talk of long-term commitment, I would usually start my usual flaw finding and reasons why this person isn't good for me and why we wouldn't last long-term, and just come up with almost, you know, any reason why. And I always had this thought that there was somebody better out there for me. I would flaw find, pick out little things and think, you know, there's someone out there who would be able to do this, or there's someone out there that can, you know, where we don't fight and things are honeymoon stage all the time. But that's just not the case. It's unrealistic. There's always going to be issues in a relationship. You're going to trigger your partner once in a while, vice versa. Core wounds are going to be at play. There's always going to be things to navigate. So to expect this perfect person. A few times, actually, I thought, wow, this person's pretty perfect. Then to find out later, they were doing the people pleasing. They were not speaking up for their needs. They were very overgiving and afraid to ask to receive. So I think those ones lasted longer because I was like, this is perfect. There's no emotional baggage here, no fighting. This is great. But, you know, finding out later that they were not happy in some areas, you know, made me think, oh, that's awful. You would never want your partner to just put on a smile, and then when they go into the other room, they're really upset. So I was sort of blind to that. And yeah, that was sort of the relationship pattern. In dating, there was phases where I would date and I would never want to commit. I would only want casual. And I would tell the people right up front, hey, I only am looking for casual. Don't expect anything else. And a lot of times they were like, oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, no problem. And then as time went on, things would get intimate and I would start treating them like a girlfriend. It was almost like I wanted the girlfriend experience. I would treat them nice, take them out, say nice things, and do everything that would come with a relationship, except I don't have to meet anyone's needs. I don't want them to want things from me. I didn't want them to put any emotions or baggage onto me. I wanted my cake and I wanted to eat it too. And the problem is I would always go back, and months later, sometimes they would be like, hey, like, I think I need more here. I'm, you know, developing feelings and I think I need more. They would finally speak up. And I would say, no, I told you in the beginning, I said I only wanted casual. So for me at the time, I thought, well, this is a them problem. I was very upfront and honest in saying what I was looking for. But the problem is, I was very incongruent with my actions and my words not being the same. So I was saying one thing, but I was acting a different way. So actions definitely speak louder than words. And it's not nice to do that to people. And I definitely realize that. And yeah, it's to say one thing and then act another way with someone is really confusing for other people. And it's not nice. And it's definitely an area that I am embarrassed about and don't feel good that I did. But now I'm very, very conscious of that and the impact it can have. So that was one of the things I'm really happy that I healed, because the golden rule, treat everyone you want to be treated. But really, I think if you don't treat people good, you're hurting yourself in the long run. And I know I had a lot of challenges and troubling times after that. And I think it was a result of me, you know, acting that way. I would get validation from having one night stands at one point when I was very unhealed. Problem is, that's a very temporary feeling. You feel like you're good enough for, you know, 24 hours. But then after, you're back to empty and you're back to not loving yourself or feeling like you're good enough. So that was pretty tough. I took everything as criticism. I thought I wouldn't want any performance reviews at jobs. I wouldn't want anyone to give me feedback on anything. I just didn't want it. I was always so sensitive to criticism, even though now I know it's soup can be very helpful. And obviously, if it's delivered in a nice way. Was conflict avoidant. That's one area that I still don't love, but I'm working on, and I think I'm definitely better at it than I was before. But I think in doing some healing, that area has helped. Lastly, I hope this isn't super boring, but yeah, I could go on for this for days. I had so many areas and things that I struggled with. The last thing I'll mention is drinking pretty much every weekend. I couldn't hang out with my friends unless I was drunk. I never hung out with them sober. I thought I was not good enough. I thought there was something wrong with me. Dating a lot of times involved alcohol. I couldn't go on a date without having a lot of drinks. So, you know, a lot of these wounds, a lot of this behavior that I just mentioned had to do with the I am defective, there's something wrong with me, I'm unsafe, I'm not good enough. These are some of the core wounds that were sort of driving a lot of these things. And working through them has been immensely helpful. And just to touch on the last thing about the drinking, I like pretty much don't drink anymore. I'll have the odd beer here and there once a month, once every other month. But it's so empowering knowing I can go out and still talk to people and not have to have this mask on and hide myself and be comfortable in my own skin, basically. Okay, that was a lot. What's been your biggest area of inner growth? I'll just touch on a few things. Vulnerable communication, the healing of the I am defective core wound, as I mentioned. My need for control is a lot less. Perfectionism is way down. I used to be so worried about making mistakes and screwing up. Now, you know, you see that mistakes are a part of the process, a necessary part of the process if you're doing anything. And everyone makes mistakes, and there's a lot to be learned in mistakes. You can either learn from a mistake or you can beat yourself up for it. You know, pick your poison. Well, the other one's not poison, but you know what I mean there. Pick which one you want to use. What else? I'm more trusting, probably over trusting with strangers, but that's okay. I do have this belief that 99% of people out there in the world are actually good people with good intentions, and they just want to try to be happy and live a good life. But you know, it's our pain that makes us act out sometimes in unfavorable ways. But generally, I think most people are good. And then the trust in myself that I can handle issues that come up, challenges, things that aren't going perfect. Before, I wanted everything to be smooth all the time. And as soon as it wasn't, I would get really rattled. Now, you know, I can work through challenges, and I have this belief now that I didn't have before is that there's a solution to everything. There's a solution to every problem. Everything's fixable. Nothing is permanent. It might feel like the end of the world at the moment, but good times don't last forever and bad times don't last forever. So I guess that sort of also speaks to healing black and white or all or nothing thinking. You know, I've calmed that down where you can find middle grounds and a lot of things. Get pretty panicked if I think something's going to last forever. If I'm not feeling good, I'm like, oh, I used to be like, what if this doesn't go away? What if I feel bad forever? But it's not the case. Things are temporary and things do eventually get better. Okay. So what's your favorite tool or teachings at PDS, at the Personal Development School, that you find have helped you the most? Simply the proof of the opposite exercise of reprogramming your core wounds. The one-sided belief on anything will make you suffer. What we're believing is not usually based in fact. It's a core wound that was sort of accumulated due to something in childhood or an event that happened that was really emotionally impactful. So, you know, the beauty is that whatever was conditioned in can be conditioned out. So when we're doing proof of opposite exercises and reprogramming core wounds, you know, I like to think of the analogy of the Libra scale. And if your belief is I'm not good enough, and the belief is just really has the scale completely one-sided, well, of course, you're going to suffer because you're just believing this. But when you start to put evidence of the opposite on the other side, you can at least start to loosen, balance the scale. Just know that if you're here and you have a core wound that is really, really causing you problems in your life, just by starting to do this exercise, you're going to start loosening it up a bit and suffering less. The other analogy I like for reprogramming core wounds with proof of opposite is you're almost a lawyer trying to convince the jury on something. So the jury believes something and you have to provide the evidence to sway them the other way. So you're believing I'm defective, but you got to provide proof and build a really big case, a convincing case of why the opposite is true. Yeah. So that exercise was really impactful for me. So being dismissive, avoidant, attachment style, what area is important for you to start healing? So yeah, this question's like, if you're out there and you're DA more on the avoidant side, what's an area you should focus on? Definitely getting comfortable with emotions and feelings. You know, as someone I mentioned who repressed emotions most of my life, when an emotion comes up or a feeling, if it's really strong, it might feel very overwhelming and scary, but just start to, like, a feeling or an emotion can't hurt you. So start to just maybe sit in it a little bit longer instead of just trying to run away and distract or, you know, go on the internet or whatever your sort of coping mechanism is. If you're feeling really not good, if a strong feeling comes up, just practice trying to sit with it a little bit longer, or maybe you don't ever sit with it, but just try to sit with it for a little bit and just to feel what it feels like. Feel where it is in your body. Feel when you breathe into it, how does that feel? You just sort of want to start to get back in touch with your body. Realize these emotions, they're not there to frustrate us. They're not there to bother us. They're not just these nuisance things that happen that should be like, just wish they would be gone forever. They're giving us a lot of important information. And the more that you sort of understand that two-way communication, the more beneficial it can be and actually take you out of those bad feeling states faster and quicker. And you don't have to keep distracting because you're being alerted to a problem. Your thinking's either off on something or there's an unmet need. It's directing you to start problem solving. Get to the solution. Then once you do, you feel better. So yeah, it's almost like when a bad feeling's coming up, it's almost like a child asking for their parent to, like, comfort them and let them know that they're there for them. So just by sitting with the feeling, allowing them to know that, you know, you're there for them, it's okay. This feeling is not bad. Yeah. So just spending time feeling your feelings. Basically, yeah, suppression. I always say this in my groups, but suppression leads to depression. If we suppress and never feel our feelings or never share our feelings, it's going to lead to depression, to hiding yourself and almost feeling shameful of this part of you. So a relationship question here is, what is one or more key ingredients to a healthy romantic relationship? For sure, number one, I think, is coming to the table and being as authentically you as you can. You might have beliefs that are not mainstream. You might have views on certain things that are not normal, whatever you want to call them, but just be your unapologetic self and share who you are with a person that you meet or that you're dating. And yeah, just, I remember in the past trying to act on dates to try to make the person like me. But when you start off on that, then you have to keep up with this person or persona, or, you know, you're agreeing with things that they're saying, then you're hiding your true self. Then when the power struggle phase happens and the mask comes off, you know, the person you're dating might be like, what the heck? You didn't tell me this about yourself, or I didn't know you felt that way. It's a bit of a shock, right? So the best thing you can do for yourself and your partner is be authentically you. It kind of gives permission that the other person can be authentically them. And then, as I mentioned before, suppression leads to depression. So part of you being authentic is sharing vulnerably and opening up to your partner, because that is part of you. That's your struggles and your fears and your insecurities. Those are part of you as well. So at some point, sharing those things kind of gives you, for me, I feel it gives you a lot of freedom. And then again, allows the other person to also open up should they need to, if there's, you know, if they're going through something, if they're scared, if they're worried. Yeah. So just being authentic is, I think, so important. And it just starts things off on a good note. And really, if you're authentic and then the other person likes you or chooses you, then all you have to do is be you. There's no hiding or nothing. Your job in the relationship is to be as you can be. For me, that's pretty beautiful. Self-care and rituals. What does self-care look like for Mike? One thing every day that I do is I don't turn on any technology for the first 1 or 2 hours of the day. So I'll either meditate mindfully, drink my coffee, read a book, go for a walk. But I want at least that first hour of the day to be with no technology. I mentioned this before too. If you're starting the day off right with your phone or email, you're sort of starting that dopamine trap where you're getting these hits. And then the rest of the day, you want it more and more and more. So it sort of sets the tone for the day. But I find when you don't start the day off with technology, you know, you'd think after an hour or two of not having technology, you'd be just dying to turn it on, but you're not. You're just like, okay, it's there. Okay, let's start work. And then the rest of the day, you aren't as kind of, I don't want to say manic about it, but not so pulled, like a compulsion to always want to check your phone, social media. So yeah, first 1 or 2 hours of the day, sort of like me time. I try to do deep breathing, the gym or some sort of movement. Ideally, a cardio-based exercise is really, really helpful. So good for your mental health. Obviously, it's good to feel physically strong and nice to, you know, if your clothes are fitting good. But really, the mental benefits I get from exercise are massive. And obviously, there's a lot of science around moving your body and what that does for you. Getting a good night's sleep. Sleep for me now, I don't make any excuses. I tell people I'm an old man and that I go to bed at 10:30. And, you know, for some people that are late nighters, they think it's funny. But for me, I went to bed at 9:45 last night. My body wanted it. It needed it. And I listened to it. So getting a good night's sleep is like self-care for me. I'm cooking more now. There was a period where I ate out every single meal for years and years. I've sort of, yeah, come to realize now that self-care is actually nourishing your physical body, putting your care into the creation process. And then the food you're eating is, I feel, a lot more energetically healthy and good for you. So those are some things that I try to do these days. Oh, and I have a 1 month challenge now. I'm day 5 now, where I'm only taking cold showers for a month. Again, there's a lot of good research on cold water therapy. And also it's, you know, out of your comfort zone. So whenever you go out of your comfort zone, it's sort of good for resilience. So I'm on day 5, should be able to do it. We'll see. And lastly, what services are you offering these days? So as I mentioned, I'm doing communication scripts. This is one of the weekly routines in PDS where we get together. People can share a script or something that they've written. And as a group, they can practice it. Because again, practicing communication, especially a vulnerable communication, asking for a raise, asking a partner for a need to be met, some sort of vulnerable communication, practicing it really is helpful because you're getting your subconscious mind used to delivering it. So when you go to do it, it's not as scary. So for people who are not used to setting boundaries, definitely recommend something like this so you can practice it. So people come with a script, and as a group, we help them kind of tweak it and change it. We'll find out the attachment style of the other person that they're communicating with, and then try to give them the best chance of, you know, being seen, heard, and understood. So we'll give them little tweaks and suggestions on how they can better get heard by the other person. And then we have a sharing circle that I host. Basically, I'll set people up in rooms of three, and each person has about 5 minutes or so to share any challenges, anything they're going through, anything rattling around in their mind. And you can share in a small supportive group. And, you know, the idea is, instead of just having it rattle around in your mind and not really get resolution, when you get to speak it outside of you, a lot of times you see what's going on, almost like the detective putting all the clues on the wall. When you speak it outside of you in a group setting, again, you're seeing things from a different perspective. And a lot of times just speaking it out gives you a lot of relief and gives you a lot of insight into what's going on. So those are the two things that I host weekly. And then lastly, how can people get in touch with you? Join Personal Development School. You can see me at my two things that I'm hosting at the moment. I'm at webinars sometimes, not as often, online in the school, in the members group. So yeah, if you join Personal Development School, you can see me and I'm pretty accessible. So that's it. That is today's. I don't know how long that was, but for anyone who made it to the end, that's amazing. I'm really happy. I hope anybody listening, really, who thinks, you know, anything that I mentioned where they felt they're not good enough, they're defective, that they're never going to be loved by someone, that they're broken beyond repair, or if you just feel like you're a fearful person just overall, just know I've been there. I was all of this, and it can be healed. It can absolutely be changed. And you don't have to suffer like this your whole life. There's a whole sort of life of experiences out there waiting for you. But we have to sort of go towards our uncomfortableness sometimes and not avoid uncomfortableness. That actually creates probably more problems if you just try to avoid. And lastly, I want to leave you with, you know, one of the main ways to change is with reprogramming our subconscious mind. So, you know, some of our subconscious programming is working for us and it makes certain areas of our lives easy, effortless, and we do well in. And then some of our subconscious programming kind of makes things challenging for us. And when we try to do things, it can be pushing the brake and the gas at the same time. So we really want to identify what our core wounds are, what our limiting beliefs are, and then do work to reprogram the subconscious mind. So just know, I promise you that you can change for the better. If I did it, you can do it. You're not fundamentally messed up. You can make changes, start creating the life you want to enjoy, but you do have to face some fear a little bit. There's a quote I wanted to leave you with, and that is, everything you've ever wanted is sitting on the other side of fear. And I truly believe that there's a king's bounty waiting for you on the other side of fear. And the last thing I'll say is, there's a person inside you that can't wait for you to love him or her. You are lovable, and you just have to start proving that, showing that to yourself, because right now you're not seeing it, but it's there. Okay, that was it. That was out of the comfort zone. Hope you enjoyed. We'll see you on the next podcast. And just thank you for allowing me to share what I got to share today. Have a great day. Thanks.